It's that time again. Yeah. Ya es la hora. You know, power hour. Ponle atención. Classes in session. Tune in for an hour, maybe more. That's a blessing. Learn from the captains and the leadership. Flee from religion, cause some churches never teaching shit. Everything you learn for your benefit. Line upon line is a requisite. Never take a deficit. Yeah, that mean you take a loss if you stray from the way. You get the understanding if you study every day. Apply what you learn and bless when you pray. It's one interpretation, man, it say what it say. Ya viene el tiempo, entra para el templo, aprende del maestro con talento, la Biblia es el centro,
usando a Israel como instrumento, no se pierde la doctrina como centro, estudia y ahora y aplica, tiempo para Dios, hace una pista, estructura dinamita,
los hispanos y suelita, oye como explica Israel un ejemplo para la vida, nunca se olvida.
Tune in, it's the power hour, learn your family history, don't be a coward, yeah. Tune in, it's the power hour. I said learn your family history, don't be a coward.
Yeah, just be the word. It's the power hour. The learning hour. Tune in to your history. You know it ain't no mystery. Power hour. The learning hour. You know where you're going, love hour, power hour.
Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Power Hour Plus. I am Deacon Yahshua.
Officer Zara.
Officer Tobias.
Wow, that was so fast. We just went right. Hold on, I was trying to look something up. Shalom to the 12 tribes scattered abroad.
No, praise.
Greetings. Hold on. Let me pull this up. I want to see this. I'm trying to get this ready. It is midweek.
Welcome back to the Power Hour, y'all. Hey.
It's the middle of the week. I feel like it's the middle. I was just thinking about it. I was like, good. I got in the car. I'm driving over here. I think it's like because the sun's going down earlier and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So my body's like, your body starts to shift and stuff.
Right.
You know, so I was just kind of like
real nice, quiet drive.
Yeah, it was pretty low key. You know, I'm against traffic. I think when I'm coming in, so it's not so bad. All praises for that. But yeah, I just realized we got like the Hump Day show. Right, that's what they call it, Hump Day.
Yeah,
get over the hump.
Up to the hump.
Get that boost to get the rest of the week going.
Right. I know that happens sometimes. Like I get, I'm on the way, or like I get here, and I'm kind of tired. But then, like, you know, if the spirit's rolling right, I don't know. We got officers arrived. It depends if he talks or not. I don't got Papito today. Officer Shy is not here. Oh,
come
no.
Back.
Jesus Christ.
We love you, Christ.
There we go. I see in the spirit.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, praise.
We don't got Papito today, all right? He, Papito has some technical difficulties, so he couldn't make it to the show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I said, damn. I said, all right. Because he be getting all excited and whatnot.
Right.
You know, like the way he talk. Oh, man, let me. He want to bring it out and stuff. And then I look at this guy, and he's just there like. It's all right. We're trying to build him up.
About to be a meme now.
We're trying to build him up. And then Tobias, it depends.
Yeah.
If you bring it up. Hey, I'm gonna send you guys something that we can put up that I'll talk about in a moment. Hold on. Let me put it in the chat. I wanted to put that up.
Tenno Chiti Lung.
Yeah. So before we jump into the Tenochtitlan, right? I want to bring this up because, all right. So, first off, let's pray for IUIC Puerto Rico. Looks like they got a hurricane that might be making landfall for them this weekend. I think Saturday afternoon is when they're projecting it. There was a opportunity. So going back to when we were talking about when we went to Puerto Rico, We have met with, I always mess up his name. Let me pull it up. We had met with a gentleman over there, Ephraimite, named Professor Renal Rodriguez. Okay. And we, in that documentary for Puerto Rico, which I believe is on IUIC events, right? You can go back and look at that. I think they said it was published October 2017.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I had different people telling me. I know we were debating on the show. I wasn't here yet when we went. It was before. It was before I moved here, and I'm pretty sure that's pretty accurate. It was before I moved here.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Still,
you were right. So I look back at it.
Yeah,
it was a second trip that you made. I believe it was.
Right, that was a second trip because then the hurricane hit, and I didn't go back because things were jacked up there for so long. We didn't go back for a while, and then when we went back, I went back last year. Mm-hmm. I think in May. It was supposed to be April, but it wound up being May, and I went in May last year. But anyway, we had met with this professor, Professor Renal, and he had a collection. So long story short, he had a collection of stones that, and at the time, Captain Isaac had looked up, now Deacon Isaac, and we were basically able to reach out and make arrangements to meet with him. We went to his university. And we were able to sit down with him. And I believe he's a professor of archaeology. And we did an interview with him about the stones. And, you know, we had our estimation of what the stones represented, understanding the scriptures, right? And the scriptures speak about, you know, what we've been kind of going over the past few weeks, too, with showing how we came to this side of the earth. So these particular stones and why it's so heavy in Puerto Rico is that till this day that we know of, because almost everything over here you found some semblance of pyramids or structures, right?
Right.
And not that that's critical to knowing who it is. At the end of the day, it's the curses that identify who we are. But so this was a significant find in Puerto Rico. Because this was an archaeological find of some magnitude. Now, when we interviewed him, he was trying to get validation in academia about these stones, and they're the stones of they're called Las Piedras de Padre Nazario. All right, so these are the Order Nazario collection. All right. And we did an interview with him, and, you know, so fast forward some years later, he reached out to we've been trying to stay in touch with him. He reached out to us, and he invited us to sit down with him again so we can get an update on what he's learned and what he's done with the stones. And then he also invited us to speak to his students tomorrow. I mentioned the hurricane because
– In Puerto Rico, right?
Yes, okay. In Puerto Rico, because I was going to fly out there so that I can do – the presentation to the class.
Right.
We may wind up doing it on Zoom. Hopefully the connection's good. So the hurricane, even though they say it's coming in Saturday, I wasn't trying to take a chance and get stuck out there.
Yeah.
Right. Because I wasn't going to stay the whole weekend. I was going to try to do a quick in and out, go meet with him, do the presentation, and come back.
Right.
Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way, so we're going to try to do things remotely, which we'll be doing tomorrow. We're looking to try to broadcast it on Israel Unido en Cristo Live. And then we'll also edit it up and have something going with that as well. And we're going to present some similar stuff, like we're going to use the book here from the Askinton's Casket and whatever. Anyway, long story short, he's gone through some things, and, you know, some people have said, yes, it is Hebrew. Some people know. At the time when we met with him, there was definitely nothing definitive. We believe he's gotten some pushback from some Amalek, which are the so-called Jewish scholars, in trying to validate the stones. Because it would mean too much for them to validate, just like they never really wanted to validate the Decalogue stones, you know, and all the different archaeological finds that we bring up. Because it'll tear down and deconstruct everything that they've said and that they claim for, right?
The whole narrative.
Mm-hmm. Right, the whole narrative. So what's interesting, and we'll read if you didn't see it, if you haven't seen that documentary from the Puerto Rico trip, the first one that we went to with Bishop Nathaniel and whatnot, the interview is in there. It's pretty good. We met with him on the college grounds. We're going to read a little bit about this. I did not know that Wiki had a collection of it, right? I just figured we were going to talk about it, and just now I was typing in the stones of Padre Nazario, and this came up. And within the first paragraph, you're going to see even on Wiki, that some people say there might be a connection to the 10 Lost Tribes. Mm-hmm. So I believe at the time that we met with El Profesor, he wasn't like really like 100% with it.
Right.
But I think he's starting to see and kind of lean towards it. So, you know, he's pretty, as far as academia, pretty respected. He has a pretty solid social media presence or whatever. So it'll be a big deal for us to be able to present to his students and interview with him again and bring that type of stuff out.
Yeah, that's good right there.
Yeah, so Lawswell, we'll see how that goes. And I think that's a great opportunity. We've always made it a point to be cordial, civil, stay in touch with him over the years, and bring this kind of information out. We also have Officer Eliab, formerly of IUSC Miami, that moved out to Puerto Rico to help them build. Okay, Officer Gideon's down there, been putting in work, stayed there for a long time. You got a Soldier Rafael who's been around a few years as well, and some of the other brothers there that are up and coming. So they're growing now slowly. But they're growing now. Ephraim's a tough nut.
Mm-hmm.
They're a tough nut to crack, especially because they're crazy.
Yeah,
I say they because I'm not crazy. I'm not a crazy Ephraim.
Especially that last video I saw out of Puerto Rico, man. All that shooting.
Ephraim's nuts. But, oh, yeah, that shootout. Ephraim's wild, boy. Yeah. Ephraim's wild. But anyway. Let's read this about the stones. So we're going to go back. We're going to show a video about Tenochtitlan. We were talking about that last week. Mm-hmm. We're going to finish up some pages from American Holocaust. And we might not be done. I just haven't gone further into the book. I'm sure there's some good information in there to kind of go into that a little bit. We'll probably go back to that book when we go more into how we went off and everything like that and the destruction. If we have time today, we'll go into the Aztecs. We'll talk about that a little bit. If not, then Lord's will, life last. Next week, which will be the last show until, because we'll have Tabernacles. Right. I don't think we'll be able to broadcast in the wilderness. I got to ask them, though. I mean, everybody's going to be in the wilderness anyway, so nobody might even watch. So, well, most of us will be in the wilderness.
Right. The ones in the spirit.
We got some internet Israelites.
Word, I heard some people just trying to roll up early, just getting canceled.
Oh, yeah. Who is
that? trying to arrive almost a week early. Like, damn, let me be there. Like, nah, I'm here. Post up.
Just never leave.
Anyway, so here we have the Nazario Collection. All right. So go ahead and read that for me. All right.
Nazario Collection. The Nazario Collection, Spanish, Colección Nazario, also known as Aguabanas Library, Spanish, Biblioteca de Aguabana. Father Nazario's Rock.
Aguabana's Library.
Close.
Go ahead. Father Nazario's Rocks. Hey, and look, when you put up Padre Nazario, there should be images of the piedras. If you can look those up, those were the stones that we found. Real quick before he keeps reading, I don't know if the wiki has pictures of the stones. I don't think they do. And we're not going to read this whole thing. Okay. No, scroll up. No, you're scrolling down. Sorry. The 1, 2, 3, the fourth one over on the top row. No, that's fifth. Yep. You could use those. That's a good one. Blow that up. So this is some of the stones here, all right? And he had more. He had smaller ones, like in little boxes. He had the bigger ones. We got to, like, hold them and check them out and stuff like that. All right, so these are the stones, the piedras del Padre Nazario, all right? You know, it has different types of writing. And, you know, here's the interesting thing. You know, they'll call it Paleo or Ancient Hebrew, and this is the frustration, and this isn't one of all things. Outside of biblical knowledge now, as waters are rising spiritually, right, tents of Judah were risen and more of the tribes are waking up. Even in understanding, we had to go to our slave masters.
Right.
So when you look at this and these, like even the stuff that they say, like basically you got to wait for them to validate and say that it is or it isn't, right? Mm-hmm. That's the status quo. That's what we have to deal with nowadays. So it's a little frustrating when you say that because they'll say, oh, well, no, it's not, or they're, and you know, who's really going to know? They're the authority, right?
Right.
Because they've made themselves the authority. So whatever they want to say, mm-hmm. is theirs, they'll say it. Mm-hmm. And just like Esau, such a Esau thing to do, right? They've just always taken whatever somebody else's and claim it for their own.
Right.
So historically, it teaches you that. So those are the rocks. So let's go back to it, right? And go ahead and read that.
Father Nazario's rocks, Spanish, Piedras del Padre Nazario, and Phoenician rocks, Spanish, Piedras Fenicias.
Right. So remember, we went over recently on the show, and this is what's so significant about these rocks, is they've also been called the Phoenician rocks, mm-hmm. right? But we know the Phoenicians were ancient Israelites,
right?
Come on.
Are a cache of carved stones that originated at Guayanilla,
uh-huh.
Puerto Rico. According to contemporary accounts, the statuettes made of local serpentine rocks were first discovered by Catholic priest Jose Maria Nazario y Cansal during the 19th century.
Right, so that's during the 1800s, all right? Remember, when you talk about centuries, it's if it says 19, then that means the 1800s. If it says 18, that means the 1700s. All right, come on.
And feature unidentified petroglyphs.
Right, so petroglyphs is just writings that they have not identified, right? Come on.
Petroglyphs that have been speculated to be connected to the old world for over 130 years.
Okay.
Their original site was not far from Yaco and was underground, where it was hidden under a slate that concealed a tunnel. Overwhelmed with the quantity and difficulty of transporting a trove that totaled more than a ton.
Meaning there was, remember I just said that up until these stones, there haven't been a lot of archaeological things that they found in Puerto Rico, right? A lot of other places, Central, South, and what's known as Central South America, there's pyramids, there's things like that. They said that there was so much of these petroglyphs and these stones down there that it was totaled more than a ton, right? Come on.
He opted to abandon his individual approach and recruited locals to aid in the moving of the rocks to his house.
Which means some of them probably got lost, damaged, whatever, meaning there was more in there, okay?
Right. Where he conducted the first research on them by comparing them to similar objects from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Nazario would combine his research with his religious background, leading to the hypothesis that there might be some connection between them and the 10 lost tribes.
Right. So there's this aura, all right, or for depending on if you're heathen or not, or stigma, that these stones have some connection to the 10 lost tribes. Now, notice this was largely, you know, they'll say religious because especially in these times that you say religion and religion and academia, religion and science are not supposed to go together.
Right.
I mean, I believe, especially here at IUIC with the various teachers that we have, Deacon Nathan being one of the foremost, we're able to show you that they're not mutually exclusive,
mm-hmm.
right? The Bible is the history, and then there's other documented accounts that bring this forth.
Right.
Because they'll try to tell you that, oh, it's because they were just religious, that they presume that these are the people because they're looking. You know, and people who discredit it, they'll say it's a fairy tale. So you usually have, I mean, there's more, but you break it down to two camps when it comes to the lost tribes.
Right.
They'll tell you the Bible's not real and it's a fairy tale. Mm-hmm. That's a made up people. So when you make that connection, it's BS. And then you have the other that'll tell you, the tribes are all people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I even found some stuff where I think they tell you Great Britain is Ephraim or I don't know. The United States is Ephraim and Great Britain is Manasseh. And they try to include all people. Like I've seen things like that out there. And it don't make sense because it don't add up with what the scriptures say.
The curses.
But a lot of these accounts do come from priests and friars. Mm-hmm. Right. That wrote this stuff. Now, that doesn't mean it discredits it. It just means that they had a working knowledge of the history of the Israelites, right? Mm-hmm. And remember, we've gone over this with the iconoclasm even recently on the show. Because of how effective the iconoclasm was, and let's read that in 1 Maccabees, it's 1 Maccabees 3,
yes, sir.
About painting images. You know, and that's not the only occurrence, but that's one of the most popular. We could put it there that it says it so plainly. You have to understand that it was the practice of all these heathen nations that had us in various captivities to try to erase the Israelites' history.
Right.
Remember, when you read in Judith 5, they understood that if we were for our God, that their plans would be disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
But that if we were not for God, not keeping the commandments, right, then their enterprises would be successful.
Right.
So whereas when they conquered other nations, they kind of would leave, excuse me, some of their remnant of history behind because it wasn't a threat to their whole heritage.
Right.
But we are, mm-hmm. right, and we were historically. So their aim was always to eliminate as much of our archaeological things as possible because, again, academia will tell you, well, where's all this evidence of these things? And if Solomon was such a great empire and if all these places, well, they destroyed it.
Right.
Like you're going to read here. Go ahead. Come on.
The book of First Maccabees, chapter 3 and verse 48. And laid open the book of the law, wherein the heathen had sought to paint the likeness of their images.
Right. So it says the book of the law is dealing with the Bible. That's another word to talk about the Bible. Meaning what? First of all, we had images in the Bible, right. Freaking dummies who say you're not supposed to have images. Mm-hmm. Right. And that they sought to paint their likeness. So it got to a point where they said, listen, we're not just going to destroy it and leave that question there. We're going to paint our likeness into it, mm-hmm. right? Which goes back to their MO, right? Because, you know, that was their thing. They wanted to go ahead and paint their likeness into things. Yeah, we're this. We're everybody. We're the Greeks. We're all of that. So I bring this out to say that when you read this last line here, what we read about the stones, that, you know, they throw this in there and they say his research with his religious background, and then that's what led to it saying it's the 10 lost tribes. All right, but go ahead. Come on, read on.
Due to the ramifications that their authentication would have on mainstream concepts of Pan-American history.
Right, meaning the ramifications of it would turn the world upside down.
Destroy everything.
It would destroy everything that they put forth.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They would have to kick everybody. And let's say they were to do the right. We know that's not going to happen biblically. But if they were to do the right thing and acknowledge us before Christ come that we're the Israelites and it turns this whole thing, they would have to kick all them people out of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And actually that whole so-called Middle East area.
Yep.
Right? They would have to disrupt everything that they've set up. They would have to admit that the Balfour Declaration was a lie.
Mm.
All that stuff like that. Right? Come on.
Due to the ramifications that their authentication would have on mainstream concepts of Pan-American history.
I'm sorry, you know what else that would tell? That we didn't come from no Bering Strait over
right.
ice landmass
right.
and
right.
none of that stuff. Mm-hmm. It would validate too much.
Right. Our truce is a threat to their lives.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it. Say it again.
Our truce, the truth and reality of who we are and what we stand for is a threat to their lives.
Yes.
They live in a false reality.
Yes. Come on.
The authenticity of the pieces has been in question from the onset.
And I'm pretty surprised that this is up here like this because it's letting you know, it's not telling you why the authentication of them would upset the concepts of Pan-American history, but it's telling you that because of that, they were put in question from the onset. Come on.
Exactly.
With researchers providing conflicting opinions.
Go ahead.
Despite this, several foreign archaeologists traveled to Puerto Rico in order to study these pieces.
That's like when somebody will say, yeah, I don't want to fight this guy, but man, I would love to fight him.
Right.
You know, so yeah, those stones are crap. That's not legit, but I'm going to travel over there so I can study them.
Right.
Right. Like, right. So I can't make it see, I can't give them credibility, but on the low, I'm going to try to go and desire
to check.
Right. Right. Yeah. Come on.
Where are we at? Among?
Despite
this, several foreign archaeologists traveled to Puerto Rico in order to study the pieces. Among those that inquired on the matter was ethnographer Alphonse Pinart.
Alphonse Pinart. So I guess he was a French scholar, linguist is what it says, ethnologist and collector. All right, come on.
Who examined the pieces and concluded that they were undoubtedly authentic.
But what does that mean? That's real vague. So he says that they were authentic,
right.
meaning that it wasn't something that was made in modern times, that it is something that was from, you know,
what's the connection?
Ancient Arawaks, right? Before, meaning predating the conquistadors.
Because
our history on this side of the earth starts with the conquistadors, right? Mm-hmm. Go ahead, come on.
Undoubtedly undoubtedly authentic. The explorer also expressed concern that some people could try to falsify pieces to receive gifts in exchange from them.
Mm-hmm.
Locally, historians took an interest in the matter, while archaeologists did not study them for decades.
Right. So here, now historians are somewhat different than remember, archaeologists deal with the actual physicality of them. Mm-hmm. Historians will deal with more like how they got there potentially and all that stuff like that. Right. Right. Yeah. What drove them to make it. What era they were from or whatever, right? Go ahead, come on.
After the death of Nazario, most pieces were kept at the Institute of Puerto Rican Culture, ICP, with others being kept by the UPR and foreign institutions in New York.
Remember how we were watching with the, was it the Father Crespi stuff?
Yeah.
It was something that, no. It was Glenn Beck that he was saying the stuff is in the Smithsonian, basement.
Yeah, in the basement.
In the basement, right? So when you read these other places, it basically they like bury that. Bury that. Come on.
During the 1980s, the collection attracted historian Aurelio Thiel, who tried to recruit a variety of institutions to the cause of studying the pieces. During the 2010s, the study of pieces was led by archaeologist Raniel Rodriguez Ramos of the University of Puerto Rico at
Utuado,
in collaboration with experts from Universidad del Durabo. The University of Miami and University of Haifa.
Haifa. So that's in Israel, right? So meaning they try to go and they try to get. Notice how they tell you
why
vaguely because of Nazario's religious thing. That's the hypothesis. Mm. And then all of a sudden they just. See, well, I'll tell you what. The information and the thing is, if you weren't in this truth and you're not awake, you won't realize the subtleties of how they put this stuff in your face.
You don't know what to
look for. Right. You don't know what to look for. Why? What are you saying? Just the fact that they wanted to study in on this means that they know that ish.
Right.
They know it.
Right.
So they try to get in on it so that they can put their thing in and say, no, it's not.
Exactly.
No, it's not. Because it'll change. What was the word they used? The ramifications would have on the mainstream concepts of Pan-American history.
It's the same thing they did with Nick Cannon. Before anything comes out, they have to try to discredit it before it gets any substantial influence.
Yeah. Right,
but
right.
A university from Israel is letting you know right there where this could originate from.
Right.
The language on those songs.
Right, right. So the fact that they were there is letting you know that they were already thinking that they were, that it was Hebrew.
Right.
Why the hell you got the University of Haifa in there, bro? Why? Because you're saying, hey, it might be that, right?
Right.
Go ahead. Come on.
Radiocarbon dating of suits impregnated in the glyphs supported an ancient origin.
So they have their radiocarbon dating, and, you know, whatever.
Right.
You know, I loathe to give that any credibility, but they're going to give some dates now that would line up with what we've been saying, right? So go ahead. Come on.
With a date range of 900 BC to 900 AD.
Which covers the time from 533 BC, approximately, when we would have left, all right, Israel, all right, that side of the world, right, under the Persian Median rule,
right,
and made our journey here, right? Because he says anywhere from 900 BC up to 900 AD.
Right.
Remember, the book, the Acacius Cascus said 1,000 years. We estimated it was, 2,000 years from when we got here before Columbus came and the conquistadors destroyed everything, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're saying that, giving it that archaeological perspective. So
right.
The historian said, oh, this is legit. Mm-hmm. And then now, in these times, with whatever that's worth, they're saying, yeah, these things are ancient. Mm-hmm. This is not a hoax.
Right.
Right? Come on.
Geological studies concluded that the petroglyphs were carved in Puerto Rico and that the serpentine rocks were local.
So the origin of the rocks is from there and that the carving was done there, meaning that the people that lived there had to have an understanding.
Right.
This is where it gets funky and they don't want to admit that it's Hebrew writing. Mm-hmm. Right? Come on.
Preliminary results using high-power microscopes found that the technique used was unlike any those of the local native groups, while another from a use wear laboratory concludes that stone tools were used.
Right. So this goes back to, again, what we read in the Antiquities of America excerpt in Atkinson's Cast Date, where it says that this was an industrious, scientific people. Remember, he said there was many things that were found. And we're going to read that verse again just to kind of remind before we go into Tenochtitlan or whatever, read that excerpt again so that we can put that into your remembrance of what it's saying there. Mm. So that what they're saying is that it doesn't remind them of any native groups, meaning in the modern time.
Right.
From what they know of modern native writing, right? But go ahead, come on.
Preliminary epigraphic studies found some similarities between the petroglyphs and the Libico-Berber alphabet as recorded in the Canary Islands and the Tartessian language of the Iberian Peninsula. However, a 2019...
Hey, so remember with the Iberian Peninsula, Bishop recently brought stuff out dealing with that region, mm-hmm. and it's letting you know that that was dealing with us, right? Remember when it talks about during those ages and the Inquisition and all that stuff, he spoke about Iberia, mm-hmm. all right? The Iberian Peninsula, what they say that region is, right? But again, it would all make sense based on what we've been bringing out, right? Because of... the journeys that were taken here prior that nobody gives credit to, right?
Go
ahead.
However, a 2019 study found fundamental technical differences between the language in the collection and those of the Middle East. While the arrangement of the glyphs hold no known parallel, leading to the possibility that they may have been created by a lost civilization.
Bruh.
Man, I wonder who lost.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, the lost tribes, the lost civilization. Hey, well, you got it. See, what does lost mean? What is essentially lost? Psalms 83.
Yes, sir. I'm going to say, if anybody's lost, we're it.
Yeah.
What is essentially lost? It's another way to say hidden.
83 and you
let me see
four?
Where I want us to get. Hold on. So, yeah, we don't need to.
Verse 4.
No. Start at 2.
The book of Psalms, chapter 83 and verse 2. For lo, thine enemies make a tumult.
And they still are. They're seeing these rocks, everything we brought out, that all of a sudden, bro, you glaze over that. Why was the University of Haifa involved in this?
Right.
Why? What are these things is not like the other? University of Miami? Okay. You know, you got that makes sense, right?
That's pretty close, yeah.
That's in Florida, so right there, kind of close, right? Universidad de Turabo, okay, all right, that's in Puerto Rico, right? The University of Puerto Rico at Utuado, and then the University of Haifa? It don't, one of these things is not like the other. So when they say lost civilization, right? Read this so that your enemies make a tumult. Come on.
The book of Psalms, chapter 83, verse 2. For lo, thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up their head.
What? Meaning they said, hey, we're going to basically get ourselves together and come together in one consent and do this. Come on.
Verse 3. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people.
And there's so many, we've gone over this, there's so many ways that they've done crafty counsel. Slavery, keeping us from reading, iconoclasm like we read in First Maccabees, all right? The decree of following politics in First Maccabees 1 and 40, right on down. All to the end that we would forget the law and the traditions and all those things like that, right? One of the other crafty counsels is any history comes up from them, destroy it or deny that it has anything to do with the connection of their real heritage. Right. Come on.
They have taken crafty counsel against thy people and consulted against thy hidden ones.
Against that lost civilization, against thy hidden ones. Mm-hmm. Are the so-called Amalekites, right, where they say the Jewish people in Israel hidden?
No,
they're not hidden.
On Front Street.
Right. Mm-hmm. All straight out saying this is who we are, right? So it says they've consulted against our hidden ones. Come on.
They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation.
A lost civilization. Come on.
That the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance.
Right, because they don't call them Israelites.
Right.
Either Israelis or Jewish people.
Right.
They don't call them Israelites. They have a thing amongst themselves that they don't use that word. Mm. They don't like to use that word. Very rarely. Why do you, but all the, what do they say when they talk about them? Jews, 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 mm-hmm. Jews, Jews. That's all they say. Jews, Jews, the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's power. They don't, they, the mere name of our nation terrorizes them.
Mm.
That they don't want to say it. That's the same reason they cannot just call us the Israelites.
Right.
They call us BHI, Black Hebrew Israelites, or Hebrew Israelites.
Right.
Because the name by itself just sends shivers down their spine.
When the angel gave that name, when God gave that name to Jacob, it had power.
It's power.
Right.
It's power. Read that verse again, verse 4.
Verse 4. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance.
Their goal was to make sure that the name of Israel is no more in remembrance. So now, we're not going to read this whole wiki page. You can read it on your own, right? I just found it to now, so, you know, I can't vouch for all the information that's in there. But that little intro covers a lot. That little intro covers a lot. There was one thing I did see that I wanted to see. Hold on. There's a section there that talks about a Phoenician hypothesis. They got public exhibitions. Let me see. There was something else here that I thought I wanted to see, but maybe not.
And it makes you think, too, like, how did the information about these rocks get to that University of Haifa? How did they know?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I'm pretty sure the people that examined it at first, they had some connections to those people at that university, right?
Right, right. Potential hypotheses. Let me see what he says. So they go into the Lipko Berber.
Right, that should let us know how much we need to be focusing on the power that's in our name, taking back our heritage.
Right.
They go out of their way to hide these things from us to try to discredit us and take away the meaning of what it means to be Israel, to be an Israelite.
We should not be ashamed.
At all.
Okay, let's jump all the way down to where it says potential hypotheses. Hypotheses. And start in the second paragraph where it says after the initial studies.
Yes,
all right.
After the initial studies, a set of cave paintings was uncovered near Playa Los Tubos, which Rodriguez decided to capture and send to Renata Springer Bunk,
a philologist. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, a philologist who has authored several books about the Libico Berber characters at the Canary Islands, who responded in the affirmative about their nature but lost interest.
Okay, so that's somebody who studies languages. Okay. Okay.
Kind of like a linguist.
Yeah, but I guess they deal with like historical languages or whatever. So, okay, go ahead.
Gotcha. Who responded in the affirmative about their nature but lost interest after being told that they were found at Puerto Rico.
Wow, so you see that? Oh, wow, this is exciting.
Right.
Their origins. Oh, PR.
Fall back.
Bo, I'm telling you, that's that crafty council.
Right.
You think that because this thing happened thousands of years ago when they got together that those things still aren't maintained.
Right.
They're meticulous in maintaining their records, mm-hmm. which is why they know it's so important to have destroyed ours.
Right.
And they have their edicts that they pass down. They have these things. Not to go too off track, that reminds me, I'm watching this show, Evil, on Paramount Plus, and it's like a Catholic priest and whatever, and deals with, like, supernatural stuff. But it's interesting. It has some interesting things to me. It's funny. They show the devil with horns and stuff like that. But no, so the whole thing that it goes, that it made me just think of this, how they carry these edicts on, is there's, so the whole show's revolving around these sigils that they found, and supposedly they're demonic sigils, but the demonic sigils really represent certain houses carry on their legacy of keeping that demonic stuff alive, right? And again, not to go too far left, my point is that they pass this thing down by families.
Right.
So those same families of these elect that were there together that did this in all one consent, mm-hmm. they keep those records and they pass that thing down. And it's like, okay, one day this child, oh, they pick the successor.
Right.
And they say, okay, all right, when he gets to a certain age, we're going to tell them his family history and this and that. And now let's take all this history out and reveal this to them. So they're all in cahoots is the point that I'm saying.
That's wild. So yeah. The family itself, literally, it's their responsibility to try to keep things hidden.
Yeah, yeah. And they'll make sure that they breed, like, with certain family, not, like, immediate family members, but, like, certain things and things like that.
Right.
Just that part of the show I'm thinking about. It's not for everybody. It's supernatural BS. Some elements are kind of cool because they leave it open to, like, ambiguity, but...
Kind of like the House of Dragon. They got that kind of...
Yeah, yeah. I like it. I like the show. I used to like the show Supernatural, too. I knew it was all BS. You know, they talk about Leviathan. They were like these worm monsters, whatever. It's just kind of sci-fi-ish type of stuff. But this particular part stood out to me when I see that, and they're like, eh, you know, because they have like an edict, and there's this thing, and even in academia, that they're not going to touch certain things.
Right, right.
That's why you wonder... They'll have you believe it's because they say it's falsified. But we just read about how much validation so many of these things got.
Right.
Right? So, go ahead. Come on. So, read on.
Ultimately, he combined these with the seafaring nature of Caribbean natives and studies like one in which archaeologist Richard Thomas Callahan of the University of Calgary studied how far the Canary Current could have dragged a drifting vessel to formulate a hypothesis that he wanted to falsify.
So this is what we were bringing out when we spoke about the currents, right? And they're saying, they dragged that out to try to falsify that basically we want to believe so much that it's the Israelites that we falsify stuff. But guess what? Occam's razor.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the simplest answer is the one that makes the most sense.
Right.
And what sounds more realistic? That a seafaring people with knowledge that had a navy historically were able to come together with reparations, with funds that were given, like you read in first in Ezra's in the Bible, and make a journey to a place that they knew, or we traveled across a frozen tundra where nothing lives,
no life, freeze,
miles of it. Nothing grows, and we were able to make it across that and then somehow disperse from them frigid places all the way over here, all on foot. Mm. But Columbus discovered America by accident, and that makes sense. Well, it don't make sense. It don't make sense. But anyway, go ahead. Come on.
Following the 2019 studies, Rodriguez distanced from previous stances and considered Nazario's 10 lost tribes hypothesis as falsified. Since the similarities that were previously noted were insufficient to account for fundamental differences found in the way that the languages were written.
But of course, it would make sense if they dated them to anywhere from 900 BC to 900 AD. You're talking about anywhere from 400 to over close to 1,000 years. More than 1,000 years, right? Because 5, that's 15. Yeah, you're talking about 1,400 years of potentially starting to lose the language,
right?
And it becomes a variation of it rather than slang, the actual, right?
Slang.
Like slang.
Yeah.
Like, I'll give you an example. The KJV was the English standard.
Yeah.
Do we speak this way now?
No, sir.
No. Right? The language has been modified.
Right.
They'll even modify Bibles to try to modernize the language.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it's interesting that they say this because, and what we're reading here, because again, we're meeting with him tomorrow, and we did reach out to him. And, you know, now while we don't have any type of degrees in any of these things, I think he can at least acknowledge, and I think in his frustration in dealing with academia, he can at least acknowledge and know that, like, hey, these guys, at the very least, they research. They have a level of understanding where they research.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And we're looking at these different things and these different annotations and these different books and things like that.
Right.
And I'll be honest with you, just based on what we read at the top, the academia is never going to give him that validation.
Mm-hmm.
They're not.
Nah.
They're not. It's going to be this mystery. It's going to be this ambiguous thing.
Mm-hmm. Probably discredit his name. Maybe at one point,
I believe that he was concerned in that. Like when we did the first interview, you could tell. You know, we want to be respectful of that. I mean, he's not penting yet. Who knows? Maybe he will at some point. We don't know. But obviously, it was interesting enough that he wanted to speak with us again.
Right.
And you know, he said, "Hey, speak." You know, maybe he's going to go the approach of just throwing out a different perspective and not fully buy in on the record. on the record. Maybe deep down he still does hold to that, right? Because what they're telling you is that he abandoned it, which means he held to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to believe his first meeting with us, and I think him reaching out again, impacted that in him.
Right.
Because we met with him prior to, and he didn't seem that married to the Lost Tribes thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it sparked something in him, and it made him say, hey. And like I said, you know, we've tried to stay in touch over the years and different, and he's been on this quest to try to get them validated. So, you know, I believe he's maybe reached a little bit of a dead end
in
academia.
Yeah.
And so now he's kind of, you know.
He's seeking truth, though.
He is.
So, I mean, you can't, once he comes.
But that's the thing. I think, especially when that's your whole life and you've dedicated your life to academia and education, it's hard to embrace.
You don't want to be discredited, right?
Right. And not just that. What I mean is it's hard to sit there and say and acknowledge that, hey, some of these guys might be full of shit.
Right, right.
You know, you've dedicated your whole life to that. And now until you get stonewalled, now you say that. It's kind of like people who come out of Christianity that can't come out when you bring this. Mm-hmm. And they'll say the most darndest things that make no sense and hold to an ideology. You've seen it as we speak to some of these pastors and you wonder how they can do that. A lot of that might not be that they wholeheartedly believe it. It's just that it defines who they are.
Right.
And to turn away from that, it basically is like removing your identity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a hard thing for people to do. That's a hard thing for people to do.
That cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. Go ahead. So finish reading that. 2019, following 2019 studies.
Where's that at?
Right there.
Following the 2019 studies, Rodriguez distanced from previous stances and considered Nazario's 10 Lost Tribes hypothesis as falsified, since the similarities that were previously noted were insufficient to account for the fundamental differences found in the way that languages were written.
Right, but that's easily explained when you read how, remember, we were all in different captivities, the different languages we knew and understood, and how we came over here during that time period. Again, now you have a melding of certain writing and speaking. Gosh, there's scriptures that talk about them speaking in strange tongues and the tongues of the when we married these other nations and we spoke in their tongues and things like that. Letting you know that we tend to kind of assimilate those things, right?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, John. Language, yeah. Supporting Rolston's conclusions. However, he noted that the way they were kept under the custody of a select group was rare, seen in cases such as the Dead Sea Scrolls, and was quoted as saying that the hands that made these are different from the hands that made other artifacts in Puerto Rico.
So he's talking about the ones that academia will accept, the ones that are just no connection to
Israel.
Israel. Come on.
Rodriguez did not completely dismiss the possibility of intercontinental travel, stating that these stones could potentially be the first robust evidence to begin having a discussion about the possibility of pre-nautus,
because nautical, right? Meaning dealing with nautical, with naval things. Pre-nautus,
pre-Columbian mariner.
Which is what we've been going over the past few weeks.
Right.
Who were those pre-Columbian mariners?
Solomon.
And us
during
the time of Second Ezra's. Come on.
And that they question the meta narrative that Columbus brought writing and his history with him.
Because that's the thing that they ultimately want to maintain, that we were savages. And now when we go back and we read this excerpt before we go back to the Tenochtitlan thing, you're going to see it says that we weren't, that we were scientific, that we, I'm not, I keep saying were. We are.
Right,
we are.
Right.
We're scientific. We're industrious.
Yes, sir.
We're an advanced people. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Effectively pushing the definition of Puerto Rico history back thousands of years. In regards to other hypotheses, he is skeptical of Fell's conclusion and notes that some of the words that the zoologist translated as phonetic,
that's not a Spanish word, so okay. I don't know.
Quechans such as yuca, ungi, chayote, and papaya are in fact Arawak in origin.
Right. So basically, they're going to meet with him tomorrow. I mean, I really would have loved to be out there to, like, kind of have the discussion with them about some of this
face
stuff. But who knows? Maybe the doors are open. We can discuss it some more. And obviously, he has, again, this is his life, so he has some background and access to some research. And especially dealing with what they call the hypothesis of the 10 Lost Tribes, I think it kind of gives us you know, maybe a doorway into getting some more, again, historical information. Not that it's necessary, but sometimes that's just kind of the appetizer that whets our people's appetite to say, let me take a second look at the Bible now,
right.
You know, when you bring this type of history and stuff out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those of us who did, I didn't need any books for me to believe this.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that others might not need that spark
right.
in order for them to, you know, contrary-wise, the scripture tells you, making many books, there is no end.
Right.
And you see that in this search for trying to all these different academics and everything, there's no end.
Right.
Because it's designed that way.
Mm-hmm.
To keep you, like, trapped trying to figure this thing out.
Right.
The only definitive, the only constant would be the Bible in that regard. So, you know, y'all can read this on your own time. Go ahead.
I was going to say that the Arawak are just
indigenous. Right. Arawak is essentially, you had Arawaks and Caribs is what they say historically.
Like Arabs,
Caribs,
yeah.
Right, would have been like, in theory, like Benji and Levi.
Right.
All right. And Arawaks would have been like Manessa, Ephraim, mm-hmm. and Simeon.
Right.
So basically what you would consider Latino Caribbean mm-hmm. is Arawaks. And Caribs would be, you know, like, again, there's some nuance to that. I'm not going to say that definitively that Caribs were that. Because some people tell you that, remember, it wasn't just Northern Kingdom came over here. Just like some Northern
right.
Kingdom stayed, you had some of the other tribes that did come
mm-hmm.
with us over here.
Right.
But the bulk was Northern Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And the bulk stayed behind,
right.
Judah, Benjamin, Levi. All right. But there were some remnants of Northern Kingdom that stayed, just like there were some remnants that came with the vast majority of Northern Kingdom over here.
Right, right.
All right. All right, so those are the stones. Those are the stones. Let's go and let's get the page, that bottom excerpt from Atkins's casket, all right? We want to read that again. From Atkins's casket. Damn, we didn't even do the Olmec thing still.
Pictures from the book.
Yeah, from the book. No, not that one. The other one.
I'll probably go back to the telegram.
Tenochtitlan. We're trying to get to Tenochtitlan.
Yeah, that book. That book. We're going to read that last part again. Wait, remember, because they spoke about that it was stone and everything, right?
Just the images last time. If like, just remembering like how they literally took, they have no imagination. They go to our book. And
right.
then they create everything that you have around you. And
oh, they most certainly do, especially when you see, like, fantasy shows and stuff. Like, I'm watching The Rings of Power now, and I'm just like, man, they just – Tolkien
right?
just took all – it's fire, too, by the way.
What
I don't know. If you're into that genre of stuff, The Rings of Power,
okay.
So it's like a prequel to The Lord of the Rings, fire. So good. So good.
So everybody, you know, including myself, is interested as to what your Paramount playlist is. you're dropping all these shows, and I'm like,
that's really the only show that I watch on Paramount is Evil. I don't know what else is on there. Like, I get to watch stuff, but I don't get to watch stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like weird. It depends. Like it comes in, like, you know, binges and not.
Right.
So it's like feast and famine. So sometimes I can watch things,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I can't. You know, sometimes it'll take me 3 nights sometimes to watch a movie, like, because I just, by the time I stop, I might, a little while, and then I fall out.
You're falling asleep.
Yeah, I'm falling asleep, so, you know, I'm like, damn. But, you know, and I know I can't go straight through by the time I watch, like, unless it's during the day. Like, at night, I can't, like,
right.
I'm just done. Once I hit the sofa, it's a wrap.
Hey, man, like Office is rough.
Hey, yeah. Hey, we was watching the movie together, and then, like, the first 10 minutes, I look at him, and then he already knocked out.
I don't look to put things on my playlist that I'm like, ooh, that might be biblical.
Right.
Contrary-wise, I just watch what kind of I just like, and it's pretty broad, the stuff that I like. And my mind is just so much in this that I see parallels all the time.
Right.
So it's not like I look for something and say, ooh, that might be biblical. Mm. Ooh, that might be biblical. Just
pop
yeah.
up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not. Listen, when I first came in, when the leadership would, like, tell us stuff about movies, I would go to movies with them. I mean, we used to go to see certain movies that would come out periodically, Bishop Nathaniel, up where he lived in New York. And we would be waiting for them to, like, tell us what they might have seen in the movie. And I know that you could fall into this trap.
Mm.
I would sit there and, like, try to force myself to see something in the scriptures.
Right, right.
And maybe you do, maybe you don't. I stopped doing that a long time ago. If it comes, it just comes.
Right.
Like, you know, sometimes I watch something and I don't see nothing biblical in it. Don't mean that there isn't anything in it. I might just be zoning out, you know?
Right.
I might just be zoning out watching something. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I see something. And it might not be biblical like historical. It'll be like, for example, She-Hulk is feminist. You know, like I started watching some episodes of She-Hulk. And stuff. I'll probably finish it just because, you know, I like comic book movies, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's the whole, you could tell it's a whole feminist thing behind it and stuff like that. But
can't just let Hulk be Hulk.
Yeah, you know, but it's something, hey, you know. So, yeah, I don't particularly put things down to say, yo, it's deep. So,
yeah.
So that's why I say that, because when people ask a question like that, it might be like they want to, oh, maybe there's some stuff there that I can make.
Right.
I just kind of watch what I like. And if something comes out that makes me think biblically, I just think biblically, you know.
All praise,
man. Yeah. It's not like I'm trying to remember, oh, let me use this for a show or whatever.
That's kind of like that's kind of like a gift, man.
Well,
I clearly have to expand my horizon.
I don't know. I've just always had a broad horizon in the things that I like to watch, you know. Mm-hmm. Hey, I got a lot of documentaries in my list, but those really make me fall asleep if I'm not awake. So I gotta be like super alert to watch that stuff. But I'm a big sci-fi, fantasy, epic type of thing. Mm-hmm. So. I watched that. So Rings of Power, pretty flame. Going back, they straight from the Bible, though.
Yeah,
straight from the Bible, the way they come up with that stuff, you know? It's like I got my parallels of who, like, I think we are and who the people are and stuff like that. But it's good, though. It's a real good show. I forgot when the new episodes come out. There's a new one coming out soon, but it's good. The Rings of Power is really good. I enjoy it. It's on Amazon, The Rings of Power. So let's go up a little. It's the paragraph above. Yeah, we haven't even got to the Mexico part, but let's see how far we get finishing up this.
We read the paragraph.
As American, no, but I want to, again, just kind of bring it back.
Right,
because
right.
Remember, we were just reading with the Stones about the writing and this, that, and the other. And, you know, remember, we just read that for some people, that means, no, it's not of Arawak origin.
Right.
But for others, this brings it out. Remember, it said that we were a pre-Nautis, pre-Columbus mariner.
Mm-hmm.
People that came here,
mm-hmm.
right? So go ahead, read that part again.
As America became settled by a civilized people, industry of the enlightened, divested lands of the rough productions of nature, numerous remains of antiquity were discovered in almost every section of our country, which had been improved. Indeed.
Right, so he said that it was a civilized people that settled it, right? Meaning when they say civilized, this is why the guy said, oh, you found those rocks in Puerto Rico? I don't want to deal with that because that's going to give credence that they had written language and not just pictures.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't draw stick figures on walls and things like that, right? Go ahead.
Indeed, there is no part of our land but bears evident marks of having been once settled and improved by an enlightened, enterprising, and scientific people.
An enlightened, enterprising. He's saying that when he says no part of our land, he's talking about America, about this side of the earth where we reside now, all right? And he says that there's no part that you cannot see that it bears evident marks, meaning historically the things that they saw, the things that were available, that many of these things are locked up in basements now in different institutions.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying that they all bore mark that this was an enlightened, enterprising, and scientific people. We're speaking about the Israelites, the lost, so-called lost tribes, these lost civilizations. Come on.
That they were very numerous. The extent and magnitude of their work sufficiently demonstrate. These remains of antiquity consist in walls.
So these remains of antiquity, they have locked up now.
Mm-hmm.
These stones from Padre Nazario, those are remains of antiquity, but they won't validate them. Come on.
Consist in walls, tombs, mounds of an enormous size.
Remember, it said that this thing was under like a plate in a mound in a tunnel,
right.
And that it was tons of rocks that they needed help to get out and excavate. Come on.
Of an enormous size. Posts, chimneys, stones, axes, hatches.
See, stones, right? And then it said that because they say that we didn't use that. It took, remember, it said that it was engraved with stone.
Right.
They try to say that we didn't have that
understanding. Right.
But who's giving you that reference point?
Mm-hmm.
The people who took crafty counsel and tried to consult against us and said, let's cut them off from being a nation so that the name of Israel is no more in remembrance.
Mm.
Again, that's why they won't speak power to the name. They have to, if they ever say Israelite, they have to put something in front of it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Come on.
Stone axes, hatchets, arrows, and numerous engravings on rocks.
Numerous engravings on rocks. There was more evidence than what we find now.
Right.
That showed the magnitude of how enlightened we are, how scientific, how industrious we are. Come on.
Earthenware has been discovered in some places, and likewise some very ancient coins. Knives, axes, hatchets of various workmanship in iron and steel have been found in several mounds which have been opened.
Right. So meaning, where did all this stuff go then?
Right.
That now you flash forward, you know, maybe what, 150 years, right? Because this was from Antiquities of the America, which was in the 1800s. We're in 2000, whatever. So you're talking about, you know, a little over 150 years, almost 200 years at this point, right? We're in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Where is all this stuff? All
right. They got it.
They got it.
Yeah.
Some of it they probably did. Some of it they did probably because it was too much.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But they kept some.
Their pride, too.
Because that goes back to what I was saying with the show. They have to have things that they can show to the next generation.
And that's right. What I was going to say, their pride.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like the bragging rights. So as they come of age, they can sit there and pass them down. I mean,
yeah.
It reminds me of how they put, like, animals on the walls.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so it makes me think, like, they want to pass the tools down.
We, last week, were talking about Tenochtitlan to show some of the industry and things like that. Before we go back to the pages in the book, there's a little 8-minute video here. Somebody had posted it in the comment stream, and they had asked for us to show some of this. What I found interesting, again, I like that. I still like the Asgard thing. I think it makes it more magnanimous.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see little drawings and stuff in this video, but he gives you a little bit of an explanation. I think this is a good recap. Rather than just reading. I mean, some of us don't have great imaginations, the reality is, right? So, you know, sometimes, you know, you have an artist depiction of mm-hmm. something and things like that. So we're going to watch this little excerpt, all right? They called it the Venice of Mesoamerica, Aztec history. And let's go ahead and play this, and we'll sit here and watch this.
It's time we take a closer look at its crown jewel, the massive capital of Tenochtitlan. This marvel of Mesoamerican urban development is woefully underappreciated, and it will be my goal today to get you acquainted with its amazing story and layout. Tenochtitlan was founded in 1325 upon an unclaimed marshy island in Lake Texcoco.
Stop for a second. But you see how even this has bones in it, all
right?
I'm just showing it because it gives a reference. He has some good information.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how they have us dressed.
Right.
We were not walking around like that.
And then the other thing I was noticing, too.
But when you look at the artifacts and you see the engravings of how we look, none of them are like that.
Right. Right.
Unless it's pictures of us when we're, like, in bondage.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we were when we were in bondage, because their perverted asses wanted us like that.
Right.
Because they admired our bodies, our physique. And I don't know if you've seen the show, the series Spartacus.
Mm-hmm.
They were, and that's, I'm not saying all them slaves were, but the vast majority of them slaves was us.
Right.
Right? They talk about Carthaginians, Thracians.
Mm-hmm.
Deacon Ithon's gone over this at length on his show. The vast majority of those peoples and those slaves in captivity were us.
Right.
Right? And they were lewd and nasty, evil concupiscence with us, all types of stuff like that. Like, basically, you weren't just a gladiator, you were their sex slave.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it was when they put us in captivity is how they dressed us like that, because it was easy access to get to our parts and things like that.
Right.
That's the reality of it. Their lewdness wanted to see us dressed like that and walking around like that. We weren't like that. When you look at any type of engravings that you find and things like that, we're robed in apparel.
Right.
I don't know how they could show you something like this and we buy that. And then you go to the museum and they'll show us with robes and colorful garments and things like that. So it's like, which one is it?
Right. Hey,
go ahead.
It showed in that book that we brought out. It showed like how we were dressed in color.
Right.
Lots
right.
Right. Color, fine mm-hmm. clothes.
Right.
Color.
Right. Yeah. And that's the other point. Thing. There's no colors either. Right. It said that we were dressed in a lot of colors.
The
it said our array. Right. But then they'll put a depiction like this, and it's always like some white rags and some tattered shit that
right.
we have. Mm-hmm. Part of my language that we have around our waist and stuff like that.
Right.
Like we walked around asses out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. A freaking prison. What the hell is
wow.
this?
And I was going to say, they said that they found an island. Didn't it say in the book that we built that island?
Yes.
So we didn't just find an island. We literally constructed this.
The book said that there was like a muddy bank, and over a process of time, we kind of built it up.
Funneled water, all of that. Yeah, we built it from scratch. They're trying to lessen what was reality of what we put into it.
Right, right. So I just wanted to point that out because they'll show you that. That's why I say there's some bones in some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them can't help themselves. They want to talk about it,
right,
but they can't talk about it in its full capacity. And some low-level people don't know, but some of those high-level people, there's some stuff in there. And if they didn't know, I guarantee you once the higher-ups find out, that's when they have the meeting and they're like, yeah, you're not going to go study that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're in the fallback.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, why not? We'll cut your funding. Okay, no more questions. Right. Come on.
According to legend, the very spot was marked by the god Huitzilopochtli, who had told the Mexica tribe to seek out an eagle perched on a prickly cactus. A second city was also founded 13 years later by a group of dissident Mexica who set up camp on a twin island just a few hundred meters to the north. This second location would become known as Tlatelolco. At first, both settlements were quite unremarkable, as there were meager building supplies in the area, and people had to survive off the local flora and fauna of the lake. However, due to their position, they could exploit waterborne travel to grow as raiders and traders. Over the decades, the two population centers were able to expand thanks to extensive drainage and construction projects, such as the famed Chinampas. Due to their close proximity, though, the two groups were quite closely intertwined and often worked, traded, and fought together. During the uprising of 1426, both Tenochtitlan and Tlatelolco would lock arms to take on the city of Azcapotzalco, along with their other two allies in the Triple Alliance. During the following years of the Aztec Empire, both cities would get their share of tribute, plunder, and economic activity that would cause them to expand rapidly. While growth would see their cityscapes merge, the two did seek to preserve their own identity. A quick comparison would reveal that Tenochtitlan had the greater area and population, though Tlatelolco had by far the largest market and main temple. Another further distinction would be their individual rulers, as both cities maintained separate governments.
Hey, let me tell you something. I don't fully buy the whole thing that we were always warring with each other.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we know that that's in on it. You read that like in Judges and historically how we wound up having beef with the split in Northern Kingdom and Southern Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't fully buy that we were always fighting with each other.
Right.
Like that don't make sense to me, especially to be in that close proximity. Like that's, to me, that's BS. Come on.
Here are both of their royal lineages side by side. You'll note that the Tlatelolco line ends in 1473. This is due to the fact that a family quarrel between rulers escalated into open conflict and saw Tenochtitlan emerge victorious and assert its dominance over Tlatelolco. Thus, from then on, the two cities would formally be joined up until their conquest in 1521 by the Spanish and their allies.
Stop. Look at that picture, bro. It's talking about the conquest. Look at how they just came. Notice they first came when you read in the book and they were talking about how great and impressed they were.
Right.
And then their mind immediately went to conquest. They were surveying the land. They were laying things out. Look at how they came in there with their horses and everything else, their armor, to just trot us down.
Right.
All right. Go ahead.
1521 by the Spanish and their allies. Let's now turn to the details of the cityscape itself. This can be a bit overwhelming, so let's first begin by looking at things from a macro level before zooming in to deal with the specifics. To put things simply, the city was located on an island on the western edge of Lake Texcoco, and was connected to the mainland by five great causeways.
I thought it was three.
It covered 13 square kilometers and was laid out in a dense grid of canals, roads, and buildings.
I think it said it was three main ones, and then they had some smaller ones. So,
gotcha.
Like I said, some information varies a little bit, but I mean, you still see the grid and how it was set up and all of that. So,
right.
I think that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
How that stuff was set up. Go ahead. Man, look at a smaller map in the upper right. Look at how big that causeway was.
Right.
That's the main one from Asgard that comes in from the Bifrost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead, come on.
The city was divided into four quarters known as Campan. These were then further subdivided into 15 or so districts known as Calpoli. Each of these districts held commoner families led by a set of nobles with their own marketplace, temple, and school. With this framework
in mind...
No, but
we were savages when we came over. We didn't have structure and organization like mm-hmm. that is what they try to tell you. Come on.
Let's now begin filling in the details of the city. we can begin with the most important ceremonial center of Tenochtitlan, the sacred precinct. This walled area encapsulated a wide plaza holding about a dozen important structures. Dominating the center was the 60-meter-tall twin-peaked Great Temple, with a blue shrine dedicated to Tlaloc and a red shrine dedicated to Huitzilopochtli. In front of it lay the round temple pyramid of Quetzalcoatl. A variety of other temples, a ball court, and even a school
for
nobles.
The different drawings they have. Like, there's different artist representations of what they read.
Right.
And they try to put it out there. I find it interesting. If you ever look some drawings of supposedly ancient Israel and the temple court and all that, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar layout and structure to all of that.
Nobles were arrayed around the
And that's straight pyramids, but they probably said, the Egyptians wanted it like this. We're going to put some stairs and
right.
some levels to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's straight up a pyramid. The only thing that's missing is the little tip on the top. They made it more functional. Go ahead, come on.
Ground of the sacred precinct. Just outside the walls were a host of other important buildings used to run the city. These included palaces, homes for dignitaries, marketplaces, and yet more temples. At this point, we would be remiss to skip over some of the
Stop.
Incredible
features. That right there looks like where the main temple would have been in Israel. I don't have a depiction of it. Maybe in the background if it looks. Remember, this is 356. See if you guys in the background can show the – there's drawings of, like, how the temple was during Herod. That reminds me of the way it looked during Herod. But go ahead.
Pictures of Moctezuma II's palace, which included a botanical garden, an aviary, a zoo, and even an aquarium.
Yo, we had
a zoo.
We had a zoo and an aquarium.
Man,
a botanical garden. You wonder where they got that stuff from. You find that stuff to this day. You wonder where they got that stuff from.
Everything from us.
Go ahead.
Claire's report that the botanical garden contained a great many trees, sweet-scented flowers, and aromatic herbs, which were a pleasure to stroll besides. The aviary is said to have had 10 rooms housing many colorful species and birds of prey. The zoo featured jaguars, pumas, foxes, and snakes, amongst hundreds of other exotic animals, while the aquarium housed yet more creatures in the form of salt and freshwater fish located in separate ponds. This is truly something that must have been incredible to behold. Radiating out from the cluster of buildings around the sacred precinct were four major roads. The east led to the docks of Tetemozalco, while the north, south, and west led to the great causeways of Tacuba, Iztapalapa, and Tepeyac, leading to the mainland. These were built to accommodate heavy traffic and were so wide that the Spanish noted you could fit 10 horses side by side.
Stop. You see how they were already planning?
Right. Scheming.
They noted that you could fit, it was so wide you could fit 10 horses. Why? Because that's how they knew they were going to set up their ranks when they wanted to take over the city.
Right. That's crazy.
Yeah, that makes no sense there.
That means that said that they were going to do 10 columns and however many rows to come through on horseback.
Right.
Traffic, and were so wide that the Spanish noted you could fit 10 horses side by side. Along each of these major highways were located many of the larger city buildings with a series of gates and drawbridges located at the entrances to the city. Co-located with the causeways were also aqueducts, which brought in fresh water.
Stop. What did he say? Aqueducts.
Right.
They were aqueducts.
Mm.
Like, even with their history, they try to tell you that the Greeks invented it.
Mm-hmm.
But if supposedly these two people never, like, coexisted and they came from some other part of the world, where did they get knowledge of aqueducts?
Right.
Right. And notice those are closed off aqueducts. That's pipes.
Mm.
When they try to tell you, when they claim the ones that the Romans made, it's like just open.
Right. It's like a tunnel.
It's like
they dug. Yeah.
Yes. That's what they tell you, how it was set up. Oh, those are aqueducts. Those are aqueducts. We had piping and everything.
Built in the picture? Plumbing.
No, it's all right. It's all right. Go ahead.
Springs on the mainland. These were lined with terracotta bricks and came in paired ducts, such that repairs could take place on one or the other in order to minimize total downtime.
Stop. Look at that.
We thought
Look
about
at that.
Maintenance and everything.
We,
creating
but
it.
It was two sets, so that if you needed maintenance on one or the other,
right.
or you needed to shut down certain parts of it, you could do it like that.
And it didn't stop it functionality.
No.
Right.
No.
Man, that's
Come on, go ahead.
Jackson, Mississippi, what's up?
Right, right. We need Man. Some of that over there. Come on.
I'll also note that water management was a huge focus for the Aztecs, and something they excelled at. As a prime example, the 17-kilometer-long dike of Nezahualcóyotl separated the fresher Western Texcoco from the more brackish Eastern Texcoco.
We read about that in the book, how they put this up there so that they, it would separate the brackish water from the sweet from the salt water. Go ahead, come on.
While also contributing significantly to the dike system for regulating water level around the city. Another important landmark to point out is to the north, in Tlatelolco. As was stated before, it had once been its own city, and therefore still contained many of the same plazas, temples, and palaces as its southern neighbor. But what really stands out is the marketplace of Tlatelolco, which was the largest in the American continent. Cortez reports that it could hold as many as 60,000 people. These buyers and sellers would go about their business in an immense open-aired market with goods organized by areas and rows.
We read about that there were certain street, like that they were very particular about keeping certain things separate.
Right.
And we understand how it talks about, let's get that. What's the one that I went over about the diverse seed and all of that?
Deuteronomy.
Yeah, bring that out. Bring that out. Bring that part out.
22, right?
Nine. Yep. Book of Deuteronomy, chapter 22, and verse 9. Thou shalt not sow thy vineyard with diverse seeds, lest the fruit of thy seed which thou hast sown and the fruit of thy vineyard be defiled.
Right. So there was reasons why certain things were told to be kept very particularly separate. When we read in the book, it said that they were very particular about keeping certain things separate. Remember, even you got the dietary law, so certain animals and things like that we probably didn't want together. Certain fabrics, certain seeds, certain vegetables, we probably just didn't even want them anywhere near each other.
Right.
All right. Did you read a part about the fabric?
That's a different verse. Is that Leviticus 19?
Yeah, 19.
Yeah. Hey, that makes sense. When I was growing up, I didn't like my food to touch each other. So. I understand now where it comes from.
like with Northern Kingdom, there's two ways that you get your rice and beans.
Yeah.
Most Northern Kingdom, you put your rice and the beans on the side.
Right.
I like my beans right on top. I like them right on top. You got to throw them on top. Oh, you get all the little sauce and the...
It makes it better. Yeah.
Rice and beans together, boy. I don't know. When it comes separate like that, I look at the plate, I'm like...
Looks bland.
Oh, man, go ahead.
The book of Leviticus, chapter 19 and verse 19. Ye shall keep my statutes. Thou shalt not let thy cattle gender with a diverse kind.
Right. So, again, same thing, right? How do you control that, right? You don't want them to gender with a diverse kind. You ain't going to control them from screwing each other, so you got to keep them separate from each other. Come on.
Thou shalt not sow thy field with mingled seed.
Uh-huh.
Neither shall a garment mingled of linen and woolen come upon thee.
Meaning animal and plant-based fabric, right? Animal and plant-based fabric. So that would mean that the market probably had the section where you would get your skins, your coats, your wool, and they had a separate section where you would have your cotton and your linen or whatever else they made fiber from.
Right.
All right? That's how it was set up. So go ahead, and you see the depiction of it there on the screen. All right? Come on. So put my beans on top of the rice. Yes, put my beans on top of the rice. Come on.
Tomatoes, feathers, rare animal pelts, musical instruments, fine cloth, and even bottled fresh water, amongst other things. These were bartered for using...
You heard that? Bottled water.
Wow.
He said they have bottled... Run that back a little bit.
Go
we
back.
Missed that.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Cloth, and even bottled fresh
water. Wait, go back a little more.
Bro, they got no imagination. I'm like, bro, there's no imagination.
Hey, that's that nothing new under the sun right there.
Right.
Good.
Areas and rows. One might find corn, tomatoes, feathers, rare animal pelts, musical instruments, fine cloth, and even bottled fresh water, amongst other things.
You heard what he said? You think Esau invented bottled water?
Man.
He said, we have bottled fresh water.
Bruh.
Supposedly they was just wearing rags.
Right. Come on.
Bartered for using cacao, cotton cloaks, and gold-filled feather quills. There would have been a ton
You heard that?
More...
He said that they would... Remember, it said we also had currency in the book. This part doesn't tell that part. But he said we had gold-filled feathers. Remember, they try to tell you that we sold stuff for beads, like trinkets.
Right.
We knew the value of gold. We knew the value of precious things.
Right.
Right? Come on. Go ahead.
Oh, cotton cloaks and gold-filled feather quills. There would have been a ton more to explore in the city, but for now we will have to fill up the remaining blanks with some high-level commentary. You can imagine that much of the rest of the cityscape was filled with canals, bridges, streets, squares, markets, temples, workshops, and residences. You'd find tons of homes traditionally built of adobe walls and thatched roofs, colorful frescoes and other decorations filled one's vision with color, while countless people going about on foot and by boat breathed life into the sea.
So how come when he first shows it, he shows them with loincloths on a freaking raft, but here they have full garments on, looking like Israelites of the freaking time.
Right.
Come on, man.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, you see how they get you, bro? Come on, bro. You see how they try to bring that stuff out? And then nobody would realize. They start you off, bro, that's all subtle setup stuff. Look at this great city. Look at the savages that built it.
Right.
But then they show you another depiction here. And look at them. They got clothes. And listen, some of them had like golden fibers and things woven into the clothes and all that stuff.
Hey, D, look at the brother in the orange garment. Look to his right. It looked like the brother right there got fringes on.
Yep. Look at that. Yeah, look at the brother next to him, too. Look like he got some fringes down there along his thing. Man, oh, man. I tell you, they try to get you, boy. Go ahead. Hey, all right. And Apocalypto is a great movie, but they showed him half naked right. And all of that stuff like that. But come on, go ahead.
These included farmers, fishermen,
women
merchants, nobles, priests, craftsmen, soldiers, and
stop.
More.
Right.
Babies naked.
Right. Look, so the babies is naked. The dude's in a loincloth over there. So now they switched up the imagery again, right?
Right.
Right. He there just chilling with a loincloth playing a flute, and then but the woman's in the dress. Come on. Go ahead.
For context and the sheer level of activity, the population...
Stop. Hey, look at how dark they tinted them, too. Right?
Yeah.
You see how they change it up? So, again, it's all conflicting information to keep you on your toes and all of that, so you don't really see the reality of what's there. Come on.
It's estimated to have been in excess of 200,000 individuals, with the surrounding small towns pushing the total closer to 300,000. This is astounding and must have been particularly impressive to the Spaniards, as the sheer scale of Tenochtitlan rivaled many of the largest contemporary European cities such as Paris. At this point, I also want to clear up a misconception about the Mesoamericans. Often they are imagined as being largely made up of unsophisticated tribes scattered across the jungles. In reality, theirs was a civilization of centralized city-states with impressive levels of development.
Stop. So at least he says that, right?
Right.
And that's a clip from Apocalypto that he showed that picture. And, like, you know, so... He's kind of hip to it, but he did show the first image with us in loincloth, but he put that image because it says it makes you think that we were just tribing, warring factions. He says we were city-states with all this technology. Come on.
After all, Tenochtitlan was just one shining jewel among many. It's hard to wrap my head around what a sight this all must have been to behold. I'd love to talk more about the various details of Tenochtitlan and other Mesoamerican cities, but for now, this is where we'll leave things. I look forward to reading the comments below to see what you all would like to focus on next. Once again, thanks for all your support.
All right, so that's it on that. You got something you want
to
do?
Yeah, hey, yeah. Pull up that image I had sent to the our group. It's just a screenshot from an article, right? And so the article is just an excerpt of pretty much what this Spanish conquistador said right here. Yeah, click on that one.
Bro, it takes a god to create these things. They don't even have it in a spirit to do it, man. Bottled water? Come on, man. That is wild.
Yo, fresh bottled water. Well, because you in the marketplace, you might get thirsty and leave. So let me get some water so I can stay shopping, you know? Come on. Go ahead. Go ahead, officer.
All about us, we saw cities and villages built in the water. They're great towers and buildings of masonry rising out of it.
So this is pretty much backing up what we had just saw. So you see it says they're great towers and buildings of masonry rising out of the water. So think about that. All the intricate work that they had to have, the towers and buildings going down in the water.
Right.
Because you think about it, like a bridge being built right now, you know, you got to move all the water out and make sure the foundation is deep inside the ground under the water. That took a lot of effort for them, right? So. That's from a Spanish conquistador. He said that, right?
Go ahead. We can finish reading it.
When I beheld the scenes around me, I thought within myself, this was the garden of the world.
He was that impressed. He said, this is the garden of the world.
Wow. Man.
And it's supposed to supposedly the Spanish Empire.
Mm-hmm.
that was the empire at the time. He said this was the garden of the world. That's Bernal Diaz del Castillo. Hey, and that means if your last name is Diaz or Castillo, that's your slave master's name.
Ah, got him.
All of us, man. All of us who got the boat. Because I'm telling you, man, some northern can they be all proud of that last name, man.
He needs some milk.
Yep. Uh-huh. Come on, man. Like I said this before, if your name was Smith or Thompson or whatever it was, you know what I'm saying? And you got Rodriguez and Gonzalez or Diaz and Castillo, that's your slave master's name. Oh, so you put that up there. Hey, okay, there we go. You got some pictures. And then go back to 356. So pull those up. Get those ready. And that's supposedly the artist's depictions of Herod's time in the temple. And then you look at some of the stuff we saw in the video. 356, I think, had that I told you reminded me of that when I saw it. It reminded me of that drawing. And again, even what they're showing us in the video is another artist's depiction. Mm-hmm. But if it's anything accurate to what was written and somebody described it, it's similar to what we see here, right? Come on. You getting it ready? He getting it ready to put it on there. He said, my name is Jose Diaz. Hey, you might be, you might have been a slave of this guy that said what he said there, you know? Mm. That's how it goes down for us. That's how it goes down for us. Right, just like somebody here, Judah, whatever, might be Washington. You might have been George Washington's slave, you know?
Facts.
Or Jefferson, you might have been George Jefferson's slave, you know?
Well, we got to make Israel great again.
Yeah,
right?
Man. Yep.
You got the pictures up now.
Okay. Go ahead and put that up. And then put up, can you do the side-by-side with just the video? We're at 356 on the video. I believe it was at 356 on the YouTube video that we just played. 356. Well, you can do that one, yeah. Okay. So look at kind of similarities in the structure and layout, all right? This is what I was talking about. That's one picture, all right? You leave that one there. You had other ones too that looked pretty good close to it. And so the one on the right of the screen is, look, that's another one. That's what they depicted, the temple and stuff in Jerusalem. So that would have been the remade temple, I say, in the time of Herod, because it's hard to find ones that are depictions of the ancient one. They have this one laid out pretty good. Again, look, similar layout to what you see there at Tenochtitlan.
A lot of similarities.
Right? Super similar layouts. Go ahead. You got any more? I think you have more. Right. Look, similar type of layout, same type of thing. All right. Same type of thing. Go ahead. Come on. Look at that. Same type of layout. There was another one that it had a little building like that in the video. I don't remember where, but it's all right. We don't need to. I think people are getting the point with all that stuff and how it goes down. Look, even in the background, how it's laid out and all of that stuff. All right. All similar layouts. Right. Which means it was a people that passed a certain knowledge down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they kept the semblance of that. They kept the semblance of that, you know. All right. Let's go back to the book. Let's go back to the book, American Holocaust. All right. Want the American Holocaust book. All right. And I forgot where I was going to put the Omics. I didn't even think I sent you links about the Omics, so I can't even remember. Zoom in a little because I can't see it, so I know Tobias can't see it.
Facts.
And then I think we had went down to keep going. Each kind of merchandise it's sold. Okay, we'll start there because we read a little bit of that paragraph. All right, so we're going back to the book. We were reading excerpts from these pages last week. We're going back to the book to describe this. And again, what prompted me to think of this is when we were reading in the excerpts from Atkins's casket, which is an excerpt from Antiquities of America. It speaks about the enlightened, industrious, and scientific people that we are, mm-hmm. and the things that were found. And they don't teach you this in history. They don't teach you these things, right? Come on.
Each kind of merchandise is sold in its own street without any mixture whatever.
And we read in the scriptures why. That's just some of it. There's a lot of scriptures that talk about why you don't mix this and that, mm-hmm. keep this separate, so on and so forth, right? Here's the rationale behind that. Come on.
Cortez wrote, they are very particular in this. even entertainers had a residential district of their own, says Bernal Diaz.
That's the same guy. That's the same conquistador that we just read, Bernal Diaz, damn, that you read the excerpt from. Come on.
A place where they lived a great many people who had no other occupation than to be dancers, and others who used stilts on their feet. And others who flew when they danced up in the air.
So that means they were gymnasts. That means they were like gymnasts,
right?
Right. So, or like you see like capoeira and yeah, stuff like yeah, that. They was like just boom, like, and bro, it says they flew. That means they had so much ups. It was just boom, like flying. You know, you see them gymnasts do them tumbles and whatever,
right.
Oh, how yeah, high they can get,
mm-hmm,
right? And you know, our people do that stuff the best. So right, come on, go ahead.
There were streets where herbalists plied their trade, areas of apothecary shops, and shops like barbers, where they have their hair washed and shaved. Barbershops? Well, my bad.
They say,
that's literally what it is, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And shops like barbers. It says that we met. So that's why you know the barbershop thing, that's like uniquely us.
Right.
The way we roll with the barbershop.
Is, wow.
Hey, so it says herbalists, they had GNC, and it said they had areas for apothecary. They had pharmacies, apothecaries dealing with pharmacies, all right?
Right?
So they had the herbalists and everything, and we had those things set up. Come on.
Have their hair washed. But
they'll have you think that you had to go into the wilderness and see the shaman.
Right,
and
right,
stuff like
right,
that, right? Come on,
hell
go ahead.
No. Hair washed and shaved. And
look at that. So we had a barbershop where you get a wash and all that, right? You get your shape up. Come on.
And shops where they sell food and drink.
Meaning they had like restaurants and little fast food things and stuff like
right,
that. Like they just sold that, you know, that stuff has been there. Like this is stuff that we had as a people. And they try to tell you that we were tribal savages kind of barely getting by. Right.
You see that in the northern kingdom countries anyway, like in
right,
Central and South America.
Right.
They have
well,
the food
it's,
on the side of the
it's
road.
Deeply ingrained in us. Yeah. It's deeply ingrained in us. Come on.
Wrote Cortez, as well as green grocer streets where one could buy every sort of vegetable, especially onions, leeks. The leeks.
The onions and leeks.
Them leeks.
In Egypt. Come on.
Leeks, garlic, common cress, and watercress. Baraz, sorrel, teasels, and artichokes.
I like some artichokes, man. Look at that. So it says they had growth. So that was basic. That street was the grocery store.
Right.
So you would go and get your produce. That was the produce street that we had.
The
come
original
on,
Sprouts.
Right. The original Sprouts. Whole Foods.
Right.
Come on.
And there are many sorts of fruit, among which are cherries and plums, like those in Spain.
Right. So that, no, he's saying I recognize some of the things that we also have in Spain. Right. Come on.
There were stores and streets that specialized in game and birds of every species found in this land. Chickens, partridges, and quails. Wild ducks, flycatchers, widgeons, turtle doves, pigeons, cane birds, parrots, eagles and eagle owls, falcons, sparrow hawks, and kestrels, as well as rabbits and hares and stags and small gelded dogs, which they breed for eating.
I don't know about eating any dogs.
Right.
I know we went off eating other stuff, all right? But, you know,
nah.
I'm going to say nah. But we were in all types of stuff, so maybe, maybe. He said with small gilded dogs, which they breed for eating. Come on.
There was so much more in this mercantile center overseen by officials who enforced laws of fairness regarding weights and measures.
Hey, that we had that too. Remember right, how it talks about we couldn't wait to make the falsify the balances
yeah,
and stuff like that? So that comes from our history as Israelites, that we had to have people that would oversee it to make sure that it was fair, that it was done properly, all right? Come on.
Fairness regarding weights and measures and the quality of goods pervade that Bernal Diaz said, we were astounded at the number of people and the quantity of merchandise that it contained and at the good order and control that it contained. And for we had never seen such a thing before.
Because meaning that back home to him in Spain,
they had no order.
They had no order. Robin they had
stealing,
no structure. Robin stealing, right? Falsifying the weights. All that stuff. Come on.
There were honeys and honey paste and other dainties like nut paste, waxes, syrups, chocolate, sugar, wine. In addition, said Cortez.
That means that, bro, they were losing their mind there. That's why he said this must be the garden of the earth.
Bro, we was living good.
Hell man, yeah. We was all right. So they came and freaking jacked everything up. Come on.
There are many sorts of spun cotton, in Hanks of every color.
So why they always show us with like some pale white loincloth?
Bland.
He says there were many sorts of spun cotton in Hanks of every color. Come on.
And it seems like the silk market at Granada.
We also had a silk market as well. Come on.
Except here, there is much greater quantity.
But we had more of it. Go ahead.
They sell as many colors for painters as may be found in Spain, and all of the excellent hues.
So meaning, not just painters that paint house, meaning artistic.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that they sold paints. Like, you know, they have you think that, you know, it was them because of the Renaissance, that they came with painting and all this art and things like that, right? Excuse me, you go to a lot of these museums and you have like, you know, the Mona Lisa and Leonardo da Vinci's works and all this other stuff.
Right.
Michelangelo and everybody else. It says that they had so many colors, they had a market for it, for all the different artistic people amongst us. Come on.
They sell deer skins with and without the hair, and some are dyed white or in various colors. They sell much earthenware.
Earthenware. Remember how it said in the Accus's casket that there's a lot of evidence of earthenware of the type of people that we are. Come on.
Which, for the most part, is very good. There are both large and small pitchers, jugs, pots, tiles, and many other sorts of vessels, all of good clay, and most of them glazed and painted.
That don't sound like the savages that they portrayed us to be. Come on.
Yeah, nah.
They sell maize. Isn't that what they make?
Maize. That's corn.
Okay.
Maize, come on.
They sell maize, both as grain and as bread, and it is better both in appearance.
Cornbread.
Cornbread. No, arepas, that means arepas too. Come on.
In appearance and in taste than any found in the islands or on the mainland.
They said it's better in appearance and in taste than any found on the islands or the mainland. Hey, and that's heavy because he's talking about Central America here with the Aztecs, but... compared to, like, the islands, like, you know, Ephraim, Manassas, Simeon,
mm-hmm.
Like, most South Americans are known for some sort of, like, arepa or things like that, you know, like, that they make with the corn. So that's, like, a historical food for them.
Right.
So they're, like, good at it. They're, like, real good at it. Right. You know, Issachar, to this day, they always with the corn masa and stuff like that.
Right.
So they do it in tortillas. You go further south into tamale. South America, and they do it savory. They do it sweet. There's different types of corn that they have for it and all that. I'm getting hungry now thinking about it, boy. I go for some arepas now.
Yeah.
See, in New York, you get that, like, anywhere. Like, you just go to Queens. And you'll get any type of arepa from, like, you know, South America or whatever over there, you know. So, like, Queens, you get South American food, you know. You get your Issachar food, you get whatever.
Anyway.
But go ahead. So they sell maize, both as green. Go ahead.
They sell chicken and fish pies. And
pupusas, that's the other one, yeah. Pupusas, too. Pupusas be banging. Things are good.
And much fresh and salted fish, as well as raw and cooked fish. They sell hen and
goose. See, they have sushi.
Right.
They tell you the Japanese that came up with it. Go ahead.
They sell hen and goose eggs and eggs and all of the other birds I have mentioned in great number, and they sell tortillas made from eggs.
And they sell tortillas made from eggs. Go ahead. Continue on.
At last, Cortez surrendered the task of trying to describe it all.
He said it's too much. He said, I can't even continue writing about all this. Come on. Man.
Besides those things, which I have already mentioned, they sell in the market. Everything else is to be found in this land. But they are so many and so varied that because of their great number and because I cannot remember many of them, nor do I know what they are called, I shall not mention them. Added Bernal Diaz, but why do I waste so many words in recounting what they sell in the great market?
Right, because his eyes were full of lust and greed
for
wealth, covetousness. Mm. That's why. Come on.
For I shall never finish if I tell it in detail. Some of the soldiers among us who had been in many parts of the world, in Constantinople, and all over Italy and in Rome, said that so large a marketplace and so full of people and so well regulated and arranged, they had never beheld before.
Right, and these are people who are supposedly, right, these are the most
everything.
Sophisticated. They were the enlightened of the world. This is what they say about Europe.
Traveled.
Right. Constantinople was supposed to be like a huge, glorious city.
Right.
And said that these guys, nothing compared to what they saw when they got here. What's up, Soldier?
Hey, and I was going to say, that reminds me of how today, how we're trying to get back to that with, like, the Black Wall Street.
Yep, trying to get that stuff up. Yeah, I know, but some people ain't in the right spirit with that, though. So.
And I was going to
That's not the greatest example, but hey. the spirit is there today.
Right. Yeah. You know what I mean.
Everybody wants to sell T-shirts.
Yeah.
Remember, they said this was a diversified, varied market. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to sell T-shirts and hoodies.
Right. If we can get in the right spirit, you see that we can. If we in the right spirit, we can do great things. So Black Wall Street, get it together.
Right.
And this was only the market.
Well, just the last two pages we read was just the market. Go ahead, come on.
The rest of Tenochtitlan overflowed with gorgeous gardens, arboretums, and aviaries. Artwork was everywhere. Artwork so dazzling in conception and execution that when the German master Albrecht Dürer. Yeah.
Nein.
That was it.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Saw some pieces that Cortez brought back to Europe, he exclaimed that he had never seen in all my days what so rejoiced my heart as these things.
So I guess, I don't know who the hell Albrecht Dürer is, but I guess he was some famous artist.
Well renowned.
And he said the stuff he saw us, bro, that's not a savage, uncivilized people.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to create the narrative that we were uncivilized to justify their atrocities. We're bringing civilization to them. We're civilizing them.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Where you at?
Indeed, I cannot say enough about the things that were brought before me.
Mm.
If architectural splendor and floral redolence were among the sights and smells that most commonly greeted a stroller in the city.
Meaning it didn't stink. Right. It smelled nice. It felt fragrant. It smelled good when you were there. Come on.
Right? The most ever-present sounds, apart from the murmur and hum of voices from the mercantile district, which Bernal Diaz said could be heard from more than a league off.
So, you know, like when you hear the buzz of just people talking and commerce and things going on. Go ahead. Come on.
Were the songs of the many multicolored birds, parrots, hummingbirds, falcons, jays, herons, owls, condors, and dozens of other exotic species who lived in public aviaries that the government maintained.
Wow.
As Cortez wrote to his king, most powerful lord, in order to give an account to your royal excellency of the magnificence, the strange and marvelous things of this great city and of the dominion and wealth of this Moctezuma.
The dominion and wealth. That's Moctezuma. He's writing Moctezuma. But
like Montezuma's wealth?
That's Moctezuma, like the Moctezuma.
Okay.
Right? Because he tells him that's the ruler of Tenochtitlan. Go ahead.
Its ruler and of the...
So you see where their mind was? And then the king, in his pomp and his pride, because Spain was the world power at the time, sees that and says, I must have it.
Right.
I must have it. Right. Go ahead.
And of the right, of the rights and...
Is this the last page that we have?
This page eight.
This is the last page.
This is the last page I took pictures of. There's a lot more in the book, but there's only 8 pages of the book.
Hmm.
Well, go ahead.
Rights, customs of the people, and the order there is in the government of the capital as well as in the other cities of Montezuma.
We had governments. We had government structure, right? And it's funny because it's like you look at all this and then you see us trying to put governments and offices and administrations, and we've gotten better as a body. I'm not getting on everybody, but you still have people that resist that sort of thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that's something to be desired. Like how do you want to gather yourself together and be gathered together in freaking chaos?
Right.
That's heavy right there.
I was going to say, too, like, we used to have people, like, we had an office, whether your office was doing the incense for the sanctuary,
mm-hmm.
or whether you were the scribe. Just like they said, they had all the singers together in Tenochtitlan.
Right. Hey, when David said, I'd rather be a doorman in the kingdom, what does that mean? We had doormen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it, like, all those type of things. Right, and that's what you did. That was your job.
Mm.
You were a doorman. That was it, whether it be in the royal court, the doorman to the garden, whatever it was. All right.
So when you be saying, like, if you be in the bathrooms and you're doing the bathrooms, do it unto the Lord.
Right.
That's your office. Do it like
right.
it was full of stability.
Listen, in order to build a nation, I don't think people understand that when they say they declare a country, they declare a nation.
Right.
What do you think comes with that?
Mm.
A responsibility to run that thing. What do you think? Is YOLO, every man for himself?
Right.
You know, do you? It that's not You need sanitation. You need markets. You need availability of resources. You need plumbing. You need electricity in these times. Mm-hmm. You need all those types of things. And a wise leader understands those things, and they try to implement those things. It's only freaking morons, right? The Negro Hispanic mind that says, no, we don't need none of those things.
Who's gonna
clean the toilets then? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if we didn't have a cleaning crew that didn't clean? You know, there's certain offices that maybe like are unsung, but you know, the brothers that do the cleanup, that's, there's honor in that.
Right. Facts.
But you know, that it's just one of those offices that, you know, you only notice it when it's not clean.
Exactly. Yeah, it's
true.
Yeah.
But you got to stop and think like, damn, you know, the brothers that take out trash, there's honor in that. Because if everybody was just here with that mentality of not building that structure, but to build a nation, to build something like this, there's offices and all those things that have to be fulfilled.
And what's that scripture? I think it's 1 Corinthians 15. It says on the less desirable parts, we bestow the more honor.
Right.
So it's the same. Even
if they're more necessary.
They're more necessary. What are you going to do if the plumbing, or we don't clean the bathrooms? You just got to stink it. It's not going to have the smells like we had in this.
Right. No, exactly. All praises. Go ahead. So
Montezuma's dominions. I would need much time and many expert narrators. I cannot describe 100th part of all the things which could be mentioned.
Meaning that as much as we're sitting here, we're like, wow.
Mm-hmm. Was that 1% right there?
Yes.
God.
He's saying
1%.
He's saying there's no way I can ever do it justice in words.
Right.
He said there's nothing that I can tell you to fully describe what I'm seeing here.
So everything that you've been teaching right here, just this, all the videos, the pictures, is 1%.
Not just 1%. Even the videos and the imagery, that's not accurate.
Right.
It's better than that.
I was gonna say, if he's talking about this city like that, imagine the kingdom of heaven on earth.
Right.
It's his eyes haven't even seen nor ears heard. Right.
Hey, and don't just make it think that this is some outlier. In the video that we saw, he said Tenochtitlan was just one of many cities in this side of the world that were like that. And that's what you read when we read that excerpt from that we've been kind of recapping each show with, where he says, this was a rugged land, but this was an industrious, enlightened, scientific people, that there's so much evidence that they had basically, it says we were numerous.
Right.
How do you get numerous? You don't get numerous by not having offices like this, by not having things in order and structure fulfilled and set up.
Right.
That's how important that type of stuff is. And it's not just us coming together. That's the biggest difference between, you know, let's say you wanted to put I'm just saying this to put it out there. Let's say you put ideology aside. You don't see nation building in the Christian church. You see people that get together on Sunday so that they can say praise Jesus, read a few scriptures. Everybody goes out to do their own thing.
Right.
You don't see that type of unity. You don't see that type of structure. You don't see the type of programs and the things that we're putting in place. It's not just, we have men's retreats and we have this and we have that. Yeah. You're still not missing. You're not teaching people how to build a nation.
No.
You're doing that within the construct of depending on the system.
Right.
You know, we got the programs in different schools where we teach the young boys certain types of skills. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that driving over here. I said, damn. I said, I could learn some of those skills. Some of those things, I don't know how to change oil in my car and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know how to change a tire and stuff like that, you know, basic stuff. But I could change some spark plugs maybe depending on the car. But, I mean, you know, I could do some things around the house, you know, like certain things. But I'm not going to get all crazy, you know.
Right.
I know I was all proud. I wired my own fan. took me a little while, you know. I had to read it and, like, you know,
I get
nervous dealing with electric, but.
You accomplished that thing.
I did. Took me a little while because, you know, I'm like making sure that I do it right, you know, that I get it right. That's why usually if it's complex, I just more a time thing than that I can't handle it type of thing, you know. But, I mean, we have to be able to maintain those skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's not teach each other to just maintain the status quo, but let's do better.
Evolve.
And you see that because that's. You see that in our history in the Bible, and then you're seeing that historically on what they saw here.
Right.
He was so impressed. He said, this is the garden of the world.
Facts.
That was his way of saying, this place is better than Spain. Sorry, King.
Can I stay here? I don't want
to. Yeah, sorry, King. Right. You know what I'm saying? Come on.
Let me see. I cannot describe 100th part of all the things which could be mentioned, but
As best I can, I will describe some of those things I have seen, which, although badly described...
He's saying, look, man, I ain't got the words. Come on.
Well, I know, be so remarkable as not to be believed.
He said, you're going to think I'm full of crap. Go ahead.
For we who saw them with our own eyes could not grasp them with our understanding.
But, do you know, I don't know if I've ever experienced something like that where something that I see with my eyes is incomprehensible to
me.
I can't imagine, you know. I mean, I've seen some beautiful things, but I've never seen something that's been incomprehensible to me.
Right.
That you just look at it and you're like, what the hell am I looking at? How?
You know what's heavy, though? They're wired different.
Yeah.
Their mind can't comprehend what we put together.
No, mm-hmm. No. Yep.
Unless you know who's enlightened.
Yep. Go ahead.
In attempting to recount for his king the sites of the country surrounding Tenochtitlan, the many provinces and lands containing very many and very great cities, towns, and fortresses.
And fortresses, come on.
Including the vast agricultural lands that Cortez soon would raise and the incredibly rich gold mines that he soon would plunder.
Right. So so no appreciation, no respect for what was there as a civilized nation. They just said, okay, that warring nature, right, that it tells you about Esau, that he would live by the sword, just comes forth. Right. Go ahead. Come on.
The conquistador, again, was rendered nearly speechless. They are so many and so wonderful.
What they call it, gold fever or something like that? Like just...
Yeah.
They just, that's all they could see, thinking of wealth. Come on.
He simply said that they seem almost unbelievable. Prior to Cortez's entry into this part of the world, no one who lived in Europe, Asia, Africa, or anywhere else beyond the Indies and the North and South American continents had ever heard of this exotic place of such dazzling magnificence.
Except the Israelites. Right. All right. That's what we established when we did our very first show a few weeks back in this. Right. Come on.
Who were these people?
Who were these people? The Israelites. Come on.
Where had they come from?
Israel.
When had they come?
533 BC.
How did they get where they were?
The Most High held still the flood so that we can pass over in ships.
Were there others like them elsewhere?
In Israel, the rest of the tribes that stayed back, primarily Southern Kingdom and some Northern Kingdom. Come on.
And this recently stumbled upon New World?
Yes, the other tribes. Ephraim was over in Puerto Rico, Manasseh in what's now called Cuba, Simeon in DR. You had the Incas in Asher and Naphtali to the south. Yes, you had Zebulon as well. Come on, the Maya. Go ahead.
These questions sprang to mind immediately, and many of puzzlements of the conquistadors are with us still today, more than 4.5 centuries later. But while scholarly debates on these questions continue...
Like what we kind of read with the stones, right? Come on.
Clear answers regarding some of them at least are finally coming into view. And these answers are essential to an understanding of the magnitude of the Holocaust that was visited upon the Western Hemisphere.
And we're eventually going to move a little more into that. I'm not going to deep dive too much into the book, but I'll talk a little bit about how we went off and how you saw curses fulfilled by the ministers of the Most High, which were the conquistadors, to do that on this side of the earth. All right. And it was a vast Holocaust, because he lays this out in the book, because you can't, it's easy to marginalize the atrocities that they committed when you kind of backhandedly say they were a savage, whatever people, wasn't that many of them. They try to blame a lot of it just on the sickness, right? So they try to justify it, but it becomes more of a tragedy and a true Holocaust when you realize how magnificent it was over here and what they did in taking that down, right? So go ahead, the Western Hemisphere.
Beginning at Hispaniola.
Right, because that's where Columbus had landed, right? Come on.
Spreading to Tenochtitlan and then radiating out over millions of square miles in every direction in the wake of 1492.
Right, and that's primarily where our history begins on this side of the earth. So when you read little excerpts like this and things that we'll uncover in different books, and this is why things like the stones of Padre Nazario are so profound, that they can't give them the credence that they deserve, because then it really kind of changes the whole thing. And then just think about it. Like, not only are you saying who the real Jews are, who the Israelites are, if they embrace that, but then if you believe in a God, then you got to say, damn, we did this to God's people.
Right.
What the hell is going to happen to us?
God's not going to let that fly.
God's not going to let, and we know that based on what the scripture says.
Right.
So, you know, we'll touch a little bit about certain things. You know, he tells you some other stuff here. We're not going to read the rest of this page. Like I said, I'll skim through the rest of that book. Lord's will, what we'll go into next week is getting into the Aztecs a little bit. Again, just solidifying the connection. So we went through, you know, the history of navigating, right, the mariners that we are, right, and we how we came here during the time of Solomon, how we came here during the time of Cyrus. And then we also spoke about what we established here as an empire. When we go into the Aztecs, we'll talk about how the oral history that they gave to some of the conquistadors and the Spaniards that came here reflects the oral history of the scriptures. And that's what we'll be talking about next week. And if we have time, you know, we might jump back a little bit because, again, I still haven't dealt with the Olmecs, and
right.
We'll see what else comes out in that regard. But Lord's will continue to bring that type of stuff out until we move on to another topic. So we'll see. All right. So I pray that y'all been getting edified, and I think this has been a pretty popular series. People have been tuning in. They kind of like this stuff. So this is good. All praise to the Most High. I still have stuff I got to jump back to, like us being raised up as men and all that stuff like that. Definitely got to go back into that a little
bit. I'm excited.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So lots of material still to go over and cover on the show. But Lord's will shift a little bit and bring out. I've been trying to get to the Aztecs from the beginning. Can you believe that this was, in my mind, one show of material?
Nah.
And it's been like four or five?
At least.
Yeah, right. So all praise to the Most High for that thing. So y'all stay safe, stay in the spirit. Okay.
Tune in tomorrow for the interview with D.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I'm not sure. We'll probably push it or whatever. You'll see what's on there if we're able to go live. I'm not sure what channels yet, but it's going to be in Espanol or maybe a little Spanglish because some of the books we have are only in English. So we'll see how it goes. Spanish show on Saturday?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Facebook at the Lost 144K, 11 a.m. Arizona time. We have La Hora de Poder. All right. That's the Spanish Power Hour exclusively on Facebook. All right. We have Day of Atonement Monday night, family. All right. So if you're tuned in and you're in the midst of your repentance, we must keep that fast. We also have the voluntary fast coming up on Friday night. All right. So we have the voluntary. We're doing bi-monthly now. And then on Monday night, we have the Day of Atonement fast. All right. That we all must keep, afflict our souls by fasting. And then the week after that, we got Tabernacles.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorites. Y'all stay safe, stay in the spirit. All right. Keep sending up the prayers. Make sure that we're fasting often. With that, we say shalom.
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 Bottle of water.
That they had you like he said, damn, bottle of water.
This was the Southern Kingdom, Kwame Asharala. Hey, one nation, one nation. This was the Northern Kingdom, Viva La Raza. We one nation, one nation. This was the Southern Kingdom, Kwame Asharala. Hey, one nation, one nation. This was the Northern Kingdom, Viva La Raza. We one nation, one nation. It wouldn't be Israel without Mexicans. Black love, brown pride, cause we next to kin. We ain't gotta tell Esau to let be friends, cause we above all nations and we better than them. We the salt of the earth, hey, hey. And we been king since birth, hey, hey. We put the kingdom first, hey, hey. And they gon' get this work, hey. Hey, we was chosen, not cause we the most of the people. Few in numbers, but we over the people. We gods of this earth, we ain't supposed to be equal. Stop playing, you emotional people. The good gotta triumph over the evil. So my foot's on the throat of the eagle. Their tongues will confess that we the people. Cause my nation ain't never been feeble. This was the Southern Kingdom, Kwame Asharala. This was the Northern Kingdom, Viva La Raza. We one nation, one nation. This was the Southern Kingdom, Kwame Asharala. Hey, one nation, one nation. This was the Northern Kingdom, Viva La Raza. We one nation, one nation.
I can't take one step without my brothers too. Vamos los muchachos, yeah, you know that one for you. Me gusta el arroz con pollo, tacos, chilangos, sipping on cervezas with all mi hermanos. Judah and E from Dasa to Kingdom. Now we one nation over diseases. Royalty bloodline, we be the choice vine. Better ripping for you run out of time. My father gave me salt in the light, yeah, yeah. We strong in the Lord and his might, yeah, yeah. Better be careful of fire. Change all your ways or you'll be his desire. Whoa. Gotta stay away from Satan changing my mind, friend. Yeah, you know we dying daily, turning it up on a feast day. Put this on replay, no longer divided cause we all
one nation. This was the Southern Kingdom, from Yasharala.
One nation.
This was the Northern Kingdom,